And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Wow! Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right, this is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. Welcome back. If you're a regular listener of Spin Rate, we're so happy to have you. The Blue Jays won a series, taking 2 out of 3 from the Detroit Tigers on the road here on Sunday night when we record this. And it's a joyous day. There's a lot to take from this series. It's very interesting. The Blue Jays are in an interesting, perplexing, but interesting place. All is not yet lost, I don't think. To bring the sober light of day, the keen eye for the truth, we have to turn our eye to a true journalist, the co-host of Spin Rate, Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm expecting you to speak truth to power here, or power to truth, or what is it that, I don't know.
Truth to power, I think.
Yeah, you will speak truth to power, and you will... You will comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. I'm just thinking about like journalistic cliches. Mm. That's what we're here to do. We talk about baseball. It's afflict the comfortable, of which we are. But anyway, Caitlin, how are you? You're well. You're home. You're not trapped on a subway platform or hoofing it across the fine city of Toronto.
No, my feet have fully healed from that hike. And I took it easy this weekend, took a couple of days off, so that was nice. And that's kind of rested and recharged a little bit for my own stretch run coming up.
It's going to be exciting. Hopefully it's very exciting. I not as a way of punishing you or in like any kind of masochistic way. I hope that you're really busy for the next month or so, because that means good things. For the Toronto Blue Jays, for the people who listen to this show and support them, and for you writing about stuff that's interesting instead of being like, yeah, they're really playing out the string here. I hope that there's many exciting things and be like, this is the first time Team X has done this in however many years. The Blue Jays with a triumphant comeback. Those are fun things to write about. You can read all the things that Caitlin writes for The Athletic. If you subscribe, if you go to theathletic.com/spinrate, there's a big deal going on right now. They'll give you a tidy deal, a nice little discount for your one-year subscription to The Athletic, where you can read all of the latest and greatest as it comes across from this incredible team of journalists and writers and content creators who under the umbrella of The Athletic. So go to theathletic.com/spinrate. Subscribe. And if this is your first time listening to this show, thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate having you aboard. I would love it if you went to your podcast catcher of choice and subscribe to the show. You can like, give us a like or a rating or a review if your podcast app allows. And I think that would be swell. So with that out of the way, we can talk about baseball this weekend. Speaking of baseball this weekend, I did not lay low. I made my triumphant return to the men's league baseball fields. And it was glorious. Let me tell you, playing baseball, it's pretty great. Frequent guest of this show, Jonah Bierenbaum and I reunited our battery behind the plate. I was for 7 long innings. And I had myself a great time. I threw a guy out trying to steal base and I got 2 knocks. I cannot complain about that. And it's just great to be back there on the field playing baseball. So shout out. Thanks to the all the homies and the TMBL for having me back for the one day, one time only. after I drove to Cambridge for a little kid's soccer. And then I got to drive to the city of Toronto. And shout out to the city of Toronto. Scarlet Road is where the Ball Diamond is. Since last I was there, they did a bunch of work. Nice separated bike lanes. Everything's nice and clear, clean, safe place to ride. Big enthusiastic thumbs up for me. It's a much safer stretch of that of the city and that the West End than it ever was before. So I approve.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I rarely venture out to the West End.
Scarlet Road is an interesting stretch of the city. It runs between like north of Dundas up to like, how far does it go up to Wilson? Maybe not that, maybe Dixon. But there's a lot of people who live over there. And that stretch, Scarlet Road, where the Ball Diamond is at Smythe Park, is a lot of, you know, ravine lands, but also like a, like an artificial like aqueduct where there's lots of stuff that runs just west of Jane. So there's lots of like weird running water and the cool ravine and down where the park is. Been playing ball there for a long time now. And there's a golf course over there too. But yeah, lots of people live there. So to make that stretch of the road where a lot of people cycle, especially when they want to go down and get into the park, to make it safer for the cyclists and for everybody, a good idea. Thumbs up. Thumbs up for me. And thumbs up to the West End, Caitlin, with your East End supremacy. It needs to end. West End, best end.
I feel like the East End doesn't get the respect. Everyone always says the West End's the best end, and everyone just ignores the East End. So that's why a native East Ender, has to continuously pump up the East End, because everyone just overlooks it. That's why I do it. I do it because...
There are some great parks. There are some great parks and ravines in the East End. That no lies can be told about that. And East York is... it's like a whole thing over there.
East York baseball. That's where I played baseball as a kid.
Fair. Fair enough. Sunlight Park. That was one of the names we considered for this podcast, actually.
Which was Sunlight? Stan Wadlow?
There is the... So the one of the first baseball diamonds in Toronto was where was it? And then they moved to the island, but then it's like right at like just east of Queen and Parliament.
Oh yeah.
There's a plaque on the street on Queen Street it used to be called Sunlight Park because there was like a sunlight, like a soap factory next door, and they played like semi-pro and whatever quasi-professional baseball, or there was a baseball stand there where people would go and watch. Right in the East End. And I was digging around and I was like trying to think of a name for this show. And I was talking about, I had some Sunlight Sonatas or some sort of like tie into that history. And it didn't go anywhere because it was, in hindsight, especially awful. But interesting though. Go look for it. I think there's like a pizza. Imagine that, like outside of where this plaque is on the street on Queen. Where you can see this historical monument to the days of yore, when there were places to work in downtown Toronto that weren't digital publishing jobs that disappeared after 4 months. But anyway, let's talk about the Blue Jays.
Okay.
Let's talk about beautiful Comerica Park. Is that what it's still called? We're in Detroit, where the Blue Jays play. There's all kinds of stuff to talk about. The Blue Jays ended up winning two. Games, 2 1-run games, too. Mm-hmm. Who are these Toronto Blue Jays? Break them up. Some great starting pitching, a complete and utter lack of timely hitting, and yet they still conspired to win a couple games. Some controversy here on Sunday. I don't know if you saw this, the nonsense with the tarp and the rain delay. Mm-hmm. Blue Jays got some great starting pitching performances. Maybe let's start there. I know that that's probably freshest in your mind. Caitlin, you were relaying some comments post-game. Jose Berríos went out and had just an absolutely stellar start after a couple rough ones. Did he go 7 innings, allowed 1 run, struck out 11? Mm-hmm. Does that sound about right? Yep. Didn't walk anybody?
He might have had 1 walk, maybe.
Maybe later. I know that in the early parts of the game, there was much ado made about the fact that he had thrown just 8 balls in like the first 4 innings.
He didn't have a walk.
He didn't have a walk. Okay. I didn't think so, but it's important for that we are accurate.
Yes.
But yeah, stellar start. The run he gave up was unearned after Bo Bichette made an error on a ball hit to him. And then you could probably kind of give maybe something of an error on the ball that got past Vladimir Guerrero Jr. down the first base line. That may have been foul. Robbie Grossman, the batter, really seemed to think that it was foul. And everybody was like, okay. But nonetheless, Barrios pitched really well. I know you had some quotes that you were relaying from the postgame situation. What do you think, Caitlin, about what Blue Jays fans, what we all saw from Jose Barrios here on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of back to what we were used to seeing when he first arrived in Toronto, where you were just seeing him kind of like pound the strike zone, which is kind of like the pitcher that he has been for most of his career. Like, he throws a lot of strikes. And so, like, you know, two sort of interesting things was, one, he sort of realized or recognized that these teams that have seen him a lot know he's going to throw strikes, so they're quite aggressive with him. So, you know, he's just mixing it up a little bit, or sort of anticipating them being aggressive so he can counter better with that. And the other thing was, and they pointed this out on the post-game, post-game show with Joe Siddle and Ricky Romero, and Hazel was hosting this weekend, and they noticed that Barrios did tweaked his delivery, where he used to bring his glove up above his head in his delivery or in his windup or whatever. And then this outing, he was only bringing it up to sort of like the belt chest level, and then going into his windup and his pitching motion. And so, you know, two observations. One, he kind of said that he's dabbled with that before. Like, it doesn't sound like it was a complete, altering of anything that he's ever done before. It sounded like he's kind of gone back and forth between putting the glove above his head and then not. But another thing that was like, kind of interesting was that we saw the exact same sort of fix applied to Ross Stripling a little bit earlier this year. Obviously, it was from the mind of Pete Walker, and in terms of Barrios's why he did it, it sounds like it also was from the mind of Pete Walker, and, you know, suggesting, why don't we try this? Why don't we try to simplify your delivery a little bit? Maybe a little easier for Barrios because, and we didn't get too deeply into it. Like, this is probably a conversation, if I wanted to know more about the process, that I would ask him. But like, with Ross Stripling, I think that it was more of a process, because I think he had been doing his delivery a particular way for a while. Whereas Barrios, the sounds of it, seems like he kind of has, like I said, dabbled with these different deliveries before. And so he just went to his more simple one to simplify everything. So, that was sort of the takeaway. And I mean, obviously it worked. It looked like it worked. And it definitely was probably reassuring. Not that anyone should have been worried about the trade, because there's still like a whole season's worth of starts that he's going to make. And it really would have been fine if he had a few rough ones early on, because he's a human and sometimes pitchers struggle, and especially pitchers who live in the zone a lot, sometimes get hit around a little bit and then they make an adjustment. And like, he, for his career, is, you know, a slightly above average pitcher for the last 5 or 6 years or whatever it's been. And he seems to have gone back to being that guy. So, at the same time, obviously, when the Blue Jays are struggling to score so much, it's nice when you have a starter that just goes out and pitches pretty brilliantly and keeps the score very close and very low, so that his, you know, struggling offense has a chance to win. And that's exactly what happened today.
They don't seem like the kind of offense that is capable of scoring more than two. So if you can keep the opposition to one, you're probably going to be okay. I was really excited to see him, Jose Barrios, doing the thing that makes him good. It really felt like he lost his command quite a bit for the last kind of handful of starts. Hit around is one thing, but it just, that was one thing I actually, Jonah, who I was talking about earlier playing baseball with, we talked about it a few times, like on text messages and stuff. Just like, sometimes it really felt like Jose Barrios did not have a lot of command of his pitches. And while it's almost like the worst kind of way to be, to echo what you said, which is, you're in the zone, but you're not commanding your pitches to good parts of the zone. So something you're trying to throw to the corner, suddenly you're missing and it's like up and, you know, in, or up and on the inner half where it's going to get hit. And I obviously today, Barrios did a great job of pitching, you know, to those corners and to be being really aggressive and getting swings and misses and getting that, again, talking about the similarities between he and Alek Manoah, which is getting that kind of front hip two-seamer to left-handed batters where they give up on it because they think it's going to be inside. And he was getting that call from home plate umpire Phil Cousy quite a few times. And, you know, a couple maybe looked on the TV camera like they were a little bit inside, but he was that corner was consistently there from the ump, so there's no reason not to go to it. And that's a really important pitch because it puts a thought in their head, and then he can, when he's commanding his changeup, which I don't remember him throwing too many great changeups today, but I don't think he really needed it. He had a good fastball, and he was able to get a lot of swings and misses with his fastball, as well as getting those kind of freeze me two seamers on the inside half, which is huge for him and huge for anyone. And you know, you just can't say enough about, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, especially after the delay when he came back out, something that we've seen, you know, more from the beginning of the season, but every inning after like the fifth that a guy like Barrios goes out and pitches and is able to finish, you're able then to like kind of knock some names off the list. Like, okay, if you're the Blue Jays, you're not having to worry about, you know, are we going to have to use this guy or this guy today? You start to just really be able to winnow down the list of guys you're going to lean into. So then if the game does go long, for example, or if you do have to start running through pitchers more frequently, I think you saw that with Detroit a little bit today, where they kind of ran out of guys. They've got a lot of, you know, really interesting relievers in that bullpen, but they kind of the next thing you know, they're relying on Derek Holland to get a bunch of outs, which I do not recommend.
Right.
And
all the games have been so close that they've been using their best guys because every game has been winnable late because the Blue Jays are only scoring one or two runs.
Like Cisnero, I swear he and Vlad have faced like a dozen. They faced each other a dozen times in the last, you know, 10 days. Same with Gregory Soto. I'm so tired of saying his name, and the only good thing about it now is that I do definitely will not ever call him Juan again, as I know for sure now, having watched him pitch like 10 times in 2 weeks. Gregory Soto is Gregory, and Juan Soto is a whole other thing. But yeah, obviously a great start from Barrios. Then the Pete Walker special, as you kind of referred to, and I think that the Stripling thing, you know, less is more. You know, a little bit of simplicity, and I think that especially with a guy like Barrios, who is obviously very athletic, we saw him make a couple of nice plays off coming off the mound. He made a great play hopping off the mound and making a strong throw to get Robbie Grossman, kind of leaning off second base. Less is more, and strip it down and let that athleticism kind of carry them through a more simplified and a little fewer moving parts, I think. And it's, you know, maybe it's like Stripling, like you said, where that's the sort of thing that Walker would have honed in on early on. Like we gotta get a couple bad starts. We're going to fix that of him and get him off of that one. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate. But first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I mentioned Alek Manoah, who also had a great start on Saturday. His great season continues. You can have high hopes. The highest hopes any of us could have had coming into the season. I think, dude, what do you say? Is it fair to say that Alek Manoah has surpassed those high hopes?
I think so. I mean, I don't know. I think actually hopes were pretty high because he had such a great spring training that I think a lot of people were hoping that he was going to be as dominant in the major leagues as he was in spring training. But of course, like, you know, if you watch enough baseball, that might not be the case. And spring can be very deceiving. And there was probably, from my end, some question marks just because he really didn't have that much experience pitching in like professional baseball. Like, he was drafted only a couple years ago, and he was in pro ball, I guess, in 2019 for a short season in Vancouver, and then obviously missed 2020, was at the alternate site, so had sort of replication baseball, but not quite the same. And then he started the year in AAA and really only had a handful of starts before he was called up. And you know, good on the Blue Jays front office for just like recognizing that he was the type of pitcher that could handle that, like could handle the stage, could handle the pressure. I think that's probably, I don't know how unique it is, but I think that not every pitcher can do that. Like, not every pitcher can confidently go to the major leagues and learn there and make some mistakes there, but not let it sort of derail their development, or, you know, like in Alek Manoah, I've been really impressed with just his attitude. I think, like, just the way that he's almost gotten stronger, I guess, throughout the year. And he's really, even when he's had a few, and really it's been only a couple, like, not great or so-so starts here and there, but almost every time he's really bounced back from it. Like, I'm thinking back to the Washington Nationals game, which obviously now we know in hindsight that there were some personal issues happening there, because right after he went on the bereavement list, and he said I think it was his grandfather who passed away. And so, but the two starts, I believe it's just two starts since then, he's been excellent. Like, he's completely, you know, bounced back from that. And he really seems to be, I don't think that he'll win Rookie of the Year, just because I think there's other candidates that have been just playing in the majors a little bit longer. And I think Randy Rosarena, even though it's kind of weird that he's a rookie, but the rules are the rules, and he's eligible for it. And I do think I haven't looked at his numbers like lately, but last time I checked, he was the favorite to win Rookie of the Year. And it seems like he's been having a good season. And so even though it feels kind of weird that he's winning it, because like he already had his breakout last season, but I don't know, the service time rules are what they are. So, but yeah, no, I think you're right that Alek Manoah has probably exceeded expectations. Even people that were like really, really high on him and really hoping that he would come and be a difference maker, I don't know that they would necessarily have said, you know, truthfully that they totally believed that he would. That was just like their hope. And I really think that he's kind of answered those hopes, and he's really impressed just with rising to the occasion. And he seems to, you know, look like he's really going to be a big part of this Blue Jays rotation for the future.
I think that I agree very much with what you've just said. Number one, which is that you could be a pie in the sky, like, you know, Blue Jays tattoo on the inside of your forearm kind of person. And you were like, Alek Manoah is going to come to the big leagues and he's going to crush it. But I don't think that you would have predicted that he would pitch this well. Like, it's not fair. It's not fair to say he's going to come to the big leagues, he's going to strike out 10 guys per nine innings, he's going to have an ERA, you know, just a shade over three. He's had three bad starts in the big leagues, mm-hmm. right? He had one bad start, as you said, the one against the Nationals, which wasn't great. He had the one against the Marlins. I think that was one that he got tossed, wasn't it? Or was that the Orioles game? It was in the early going. And then that's it. Those are the only bad starts that he's had. He had a start against the Rays that wasn't great. That was one where the pitch count was way up. But like, he's pitched so well. 140 ERA plus. Like, that's ridiculous. That is totally ridiculous. And it's just been such a shot in the arm, and it has kind of rejuvenated or just given the Blue Jays so many options, and it has been a key to the kind of turnaround. Mm-hmm. Where here we are at the end of August, and their rotation is unquestionably the strength of the team right now.
Yeah, and like if you look at it, like coming into the season, obviously the biggest question mark, I think, was the rotation. And you think back, like, it rightly so, because back then, like, Tanner Roark was, like, number five starter. And at the time, like, Robbie Ray started the year on the injured list, and he was such an unknown, too. Like, we didn't know that he would have this incredible Cy Young season. And so, rightly so, like, starting pitching was a huge question mark. But, I mean, I'm going to say, like, by May, and I think the two things that steadied it essentially was, one, Alek Manoah coming up and joining the rotation, which I think was in May. And the other one was Ross Stripling kind of figuring it out and being a fairly, you know, respectable number four or five, whatever you want to slot him in, just back end starter. Like, and that was, I believe that was like May or early June when he sorted himself out.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember exact date, but like those are two events to me that sort of really steadied the rotation. And obviously there's been some ups and downs, like Steven Matz kind of had a rough patch in there where he obviously missed time because he got COVID, and then he came back and he's needed some time to get his rhythm again. But if you look at his numbers, he had a really good month of August. He had a really good start that was kind of wasted a few days ago. But he's been pitching well. Obviously Robbie Ray's been a star. Ryu's had, you know, maybe some of the most up and down season of some of the starters, maybe not the most, but he certainly had his ups and downs, this season. And, but you know, he's more or less still reliable. I mean, he's going to give you more often than not a good outing. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, at this very moment as we're recording, yeah, starting pitching is the team's strength. I would still ultimately say that this team is going to succeed if the offense is the strength. I don't think that this is a team that's necessarily going to be built around starting pitching leading them to the postseason, because like I said, yes, Robbie Ray's been reliable, but you're also relying on other guys that have had some ups and downs. And we just talked about Alek Manoah, and he's been really great, but he's also still a rookie, and so you never know, like you can have a bump here and a bump there. And so at the moment, starting pitching has been excellent, but I mean the offense needs to wake up a little bit, because they're not gonna keep winning these one-run games. I mean, maybe they can against a team like Baltimore, although the Baltimore Orioles, yes, they're bad, but they actually hit pretty decently, and they do hit lefties pretty decently, and the Blue Jays are sending three lefties up against the Orioles. So I'm predicting the Blue Jays are going to have to score more than two runs to win those games, or win that series. Maybe that will lead us into our next segment if we're going to talk about the offense.
We could. Can we talk also? Okay, two things. Well, a few different things.
Okay.
The Rays went 18-1 against the Orioles this year. That is sickening. That is truly, truly sickening. I think that if the Blue Jays expect the starting pitching, you got to have, you know, five Pedro Martinez's in the Blue Jays rotation. If the offense doesn't score, they're not going to be a good team. The offense is going to be a strength of the team. The timing of some slumps and the timing of some maybe guys getting a little bit figured out, I also think that a lot of players are hitting the wall. I think that this season is proving to be very long for a lot of people who maybe weren't quite ready. And the Blue Jays fans can see that first and foremost with some of the, you know, the higher profile guys in their lineup, but it's not unique across baseball. There are a lot of players, I think, that are dragging ass. There's a lot of pitchers, I think, that are really struggling. So for the Blue Jays to have their starting pitching coming on as it is such a boon. Maybe that's another big advantage of Alek Manoah, in that he has a relatively quote unquote virgin arm, in that he hasn't pitched that much professionally, and that he only made the handful of AAA starts before coming to the big leagues. So, you know, a big guy like that who's thrown tons of innings, thrown lots of pitches in the SEC, hopefully you can continue to ride him out. Because one other thing I wanted to talk about, so his numbers, his like baseball card numbers are really good. You know, he's got way more walks than strikeouts. His opponent, you know, his whip is really low. But then you look at his Statcast numbers, and it's like he is in like the king of soft velocity. He doesn't get hit hard, or on balance, he's hard to square up. He also misses bats. He gets guys to chase out of the zone. Like, that's what a good pitcher looks like. That's what a good, you know, like above average pitcher looks like. He doesn't quite throw as hard as maybe it was expected or hoped or we saw. But at the same time, if he's able to kind of add and subtract and then prolong his outings and prolong his season by not trying to throw 96 all the time, that's a pretty good thing. But we can, I think, and we shall move on to talk a little bit about the offense. I think that the outfield is a good example of kind of like what's going on with the offense in terms of they're just trying stuff out right now. Charlie Montoyo and the front office bringing in Gerard Dyson kind of on a whim, playing Josh Palacios in center field. A lot of this starts from the fact that George Springer is hurt, not ready to come back, or wasn't ready to come back for this weekend in Detroit. But also just the state of affairs when it comes to Randall Grichuk, who was having a great season and then was having a Randall Grichuk season and has now somehow slipped below that Randall Grichuk threshold. And now he's having like a Kevin Pillar season, which is like not going to fly. So the outfield is a real puzzle right now. I mean, I don't know what or why. Whatever question is you're asking, I don't think that Gerard Dyson is the answer to it, unless it's like, who's the best guy we can bring in to be a pinch runner? Gerard Dyson is old. He is not as fast as maybe some of the folks who... He's not as fast as his reputation would suggest in terms of sprint speed and stuff, because he's an older guy. I'm sure he's a good base runner. He did not know what was going on in his one base base running opportunity. He was totally wrong-footed there. Was that today?
Yes.
Just like not sure what to make of Derek Holland. Didn't get a good read on a ball that was dumped into center field. Not a great first impression. That's not representative of who he is, of course. But I think that's a bit of a sign, like that the Blue Jays are trying stuff, because it's become a little bit untenable with Randall Grichuk playing every day right now.
Yeah, and like the Dyson thing to me is more so like somewhat of late game protection. If you are using George Springer and he's back and he gets on base in the eighth or the ninth and you don't want him all out sprinting, maybe you want a pinch runner that can also slot into center field as like a defensive replacement for the late innings as well. So like to me, it's just protection, more so for like Springer specifically, for running and for playing. You don't want him diving necessarily in the eighth or ninth inning, especially if a game is, if they have a substantial lead or if they're losing by a lot. Like, you don't want George Springer to get hurt anymore. And so to me, like, that is kind of the move, like why that move was made. But to your point, I mean, I wonder, and I asked this today, and I mean, it's a hard question to sort of answer, but like, can the addition of George Springer at the top of the lineup just go ahead and spark this lineup? Like, is that to your point, like if some of these guys are hitting a wall, and I should plug because I read it, Mike Wilner of the Toronto Star, friend of the podcast, had an article this week because this weekend he was in Detroit, and I guess Dante Bichette has joined the team, is going to be with the team for the final month here. And Mike Wilner talked to Dante, and you know, Dante Bichette had some interesting comments about how he feels like this team, some of the young guys, he used the phrase like their brains are fried. And it's not that they are tired physically, although that is probably somewhat of a factor, but like they're young 22-year-olds or 20, you know, it's not necessarily that they're completely worn down physically, like they're fit individuals, but it's the mental part of it. It's the total grind of the season. Like, and you think about like the Blue Jays and like what they've gone through, and like, I don't know that we talk enough about it, and or maybe we talk so much about it that we don't want to talk about it anymore, but like the moving, the different locations, all that kind of stuff, like did have a mental toll on them. And not to say that it's going to be an excuse, but I think honestly, like now that I've reflected on it, and I maybe saw some people commenting on this, and it made me think, is like, I mean, the emotional high of coming home, I was in the stadium and it was like they were playing playoff baseball. Like that was just like the vibe. Like it was, I've never really, outside of the 2015, 2016 playoff runs, like I haven't really seen the vibe in the stadium like that ever. And a lot of those players, like honestly, would never have played in a home ballpark that had that kind of energy. And I think like that was such a high for them, and they were just like riding that. And then they immediately left on this like West Coast road trip, which is like a hard road trip. Like, it's a time change. It's you're playing late. Your body clock's way off. It's a long way to go. It's a long plane ride. And they just looked so sort of like listless on that road trip. And I was thinking, and like, maybe I'm reaching here and maybe I'm making an excuse, but I just found like, I just would find myself, if you're on this like emotional high and then you have to like do this tough trip and you're not playing as well on this trip, and then things are kind of spiraling, and then your best player gets hurt. And like, just that whole thing would have been such a roller coaster of emotions. And you're playing through a 162 season for the first time, and your body is tired and you're struggling, and you're trying to make up for the fact that your offense isn't all of a sudden isn't hitting anymore. And like, to me, like, I can wrap my mind around how some players would just be mentally exhausted. And I think what is going to be interesting to watch is, like, can they get out of that funk? I think sometimes they talk about how August can be a bit of a drag in the season, but if you're playing for something and you have these meaningful games in September, you know, maybe that can give some guys, like, you kind of can work through it, or you push through it, or you find a new level, or whatever sports cliche you want to use. You can do it in September if you're playing for meaningful games. So to me, like, that's going to be interesting. Like, can the Blue Jays wake up? Can Springer kind of ignite them? Is it going to take one or two games where they just have a big inning here and there to kind of snap out of it and you know, get a little closer in the race? I don't know, but to your point about them just kind of being exhausted, like, I think there's definitely some truth to that.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
I think there were some good signs from the offense as a whole, getting away from the outfield thing, because obviously the outfield thing did not quite work out. Gerard Dyson has graded as an above average outfielder his whole career, including this season, you know, in terms of above average. He can definitely go and get it. I don't think anyone's going to take that away from him. And he ranks in speed in the 73rd percentile this year, which is like still fast.
Right, and like the Blue Jays don't have very many fast players. You have to keep in mind. No,
the fastest player they have is Teoscar Hernandez, yes. Who is like who is a sneaky fast player, and he uses that speed to make up for the fact of his kind of adventurous family circus routes in the outfield. But Jerod Dyson is a more than competent outfielder and a guy who is a good base runner, who is not quite maybe the burner that we might think about him as, but obviously a very talented base runner who's stolen a lot of big bases for the accursed Kansas City Royals. But I think that from a process perspective, I mean, in the old days, this is when they would start to be really popping those greenies, right? Having a little bit of a pep in your step, put something in your coffee in the morning, because these were the dog days out in the heat, trying to get through to the September where the weather gets better and you can see the end in sight. But from Blue Jays perspective, like, we saw Bo Bichette hit opposite field home run here to start the game on Sunday, which you and I spoke about last time we spoke, when we were talking about the home field away stuff. And one of the things that I know that I've really been impressed with has been Bo Bichette's power to the opposite field and that right center field spot in particular. But to see him go back over there is really encouraging. He had three hits on Sunday. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who, you know, drew a couple of big walks, but also had a really, really good at bat against it might have been Cisneros, who had set him up with a fastball up in the zone, and Vlad fouled one off, and then I thought he was set up for a curve or a breaking ball away, and then me watching it, I'm thinking he's set up for the breaking ball on this pitch with two strikes, and then Vlad's swing suggested that he was thinking the same thing. That he was like looking for that curveball, but he had the presence of mind and the approach, physical approach. And I know Joe Siddle was talking about this on the broadcast, about he was doing stuff with his hands when he was in between, like trying to coach himself into staying behind the ball, stay inside the ball, and use the whole field. So when Vlad was up there, and I think, again, this is me thinking that he was looking for a breaking ball on the outside half, but he got a fastball, but he was still able to like shoot it like hard on the right side for a single. I think that's a great sign. And then come Sunday, he hit another missile, like 116 and a half miles an hour, that if it hadn't been two steps away from the shortstop, it would have gone straight through him. But again, good signs, not as good as hitting the ball over the fence, but still good signs for those key members of the offense. And the other thing we haven't talked about that I didn't write down on our little list, is Alejandro Kirk. Is much as we discussed in depth on Thursday when you and I spoke previously, but hitting cleanup, hitting fifth and DHing. Like, mm-hmm. He had a home run this weekend, drew a couple walks, hit a couple balls hard. Alejandro Kirk's going to figure in prominently into this offense, I think, for the rest of this season and probably the seasons to come, because that lad can swing it.
Yeah.
And he looks good behind the plate. I mean, obviously loves Robbie Ray, but I thought he did a really good job on Saturday behind the plate. Did a really nice job framing some pitches, really getting down low. I think the one knee thing is kind of behind him in terms of when he uses it, when he applies it. A lot of commentary types or Reddity types were very critical. They're obviously critical of his physical attributes, his build. I don't think he's that bad a catcher that he needs to like relearn the position, which is how some folks kind of phrased it. But, Alejandro Kirk has had a great weekend series, and he's going to continue to have great series because he can really hit, and they're going to give him, it looks like, a lot of chances to do exactly that.
I think so, because I also think Danny Jansen is coming back in a matter of days as we get closer to September 1st. I would be expecting that we're going to see him called up on September 1st, as well as potentially a tall reliever. I don't know which tall reliever, but one of them. And you know, one thing that's been, has not gone under the radar, but it's been kind of striking, is that Teoscar Hernandez for the first half of this month was the hottest hitter on the Blue Jays and the hottest hitter in the American League. And I don't know what's happened to him. I mean, he's, you know, not looked right at the plate lately. And it's, you know, I mean, obviously he wasn't going to be like a 400 hitter for the whole month, but I'm not sure that he had, like, and they were saying it on the broadcast, like he hadn't driven in a run in nine games or something like that.
They said on the broadcast, he hit home runs in four straight games. And then the fourth of those home runs was the last run that he drove in. however many. And then he's been like 3 for 40 or something like that since, which, you know, that's baseball when you really get down to it, in that you have a crazy stretch where you hit everything, and then you have another stretch where you don't hit everything, and then you start to zoom out a little bit. Like, the big thing I think with baseball that is so easy to forget is that you always need to zoom out. Zoom out and take, don't take this chunk as being the reality, just as the chunk that preceded it isn't reality. Obviously, those two things will start to weigh out. And Teoscar is not a, 100 or worse hitter. He's a 300 hitter. He's become a 300 hitter in the big leagues. He doesn't walk a ton, and he still strikes out quite a bit, but he makes a ton of hard contact. He has a ton of power. He's, while it's so easy and fun to start to think like, what's it going to cost to extend Teoscar Hernandez and like sign him forever? He's the new Jose Bautista. Like, not necessarily the case, obviously, but he has become a great hitter. Just the fact that he's had this rough stretch doesn't mean he's not the guy that he's been for the last two calendar years. He can hit. Mm-hmm. He can hit, and he just isn't doing it right now. Charlie Montoyo, again, sort of toying with the lineup a little bit, moving guys around. There's one thing I've seen a lot of people talk about recently, and it's, even with the emergence of Kirk, is what a difference a good left-handed bat would make in this thing. We've said this a lot. The Blue Jays hitters are so good that, George Springer is not a guy you worry about hitting about his platoon splits. You don't worry about Vlad's platoon splits. You know that Bo is who Bo is. He's going to hit everybody when he can. He's going to hit nobody when he can't. But like a nice left-handed, a nice tall outfielder, left-handed hitter, boy, he would look real good in the lineup right now.
Guy who like strikes out a ton, walks a ton, but hits a ton of home runs.
Shout out to our colleague Lindsay Adler, wrote a terrific story about Joey Gallo this past week in The Athletic. And if you haven't read it, I recommend you go over and check it out. Seems like a guy who gets it. Really interesting about him, again, being who he is and coming to grips with the fact that he's like, this is who I am. I strike out a shit ton. I hit the ball to the moon. I'm just going to do that. And became a very, very good player in the process, instead of trying to be something that he couldn't be, trying to be what he thought he needed to be. He's like, I'm going to hit 190 or 210, but it's going to be fine. And it is. But boy, yeah, that's a guy that would look better. And I saw some people saying like this, the Blue Jays are really missing Kevin Biggio, which that's like a real like high school crush kind of thing. It's, you remember the idealized version of this person, not really what that reality was. And yeah, he's been hurt this year, but he was also real bad this year. And while you don't want to, nobody wants to extract the difference between the two. If nothing else, he just gives another look. But the offense. Yeah, that said, the Blue Jays won two games this weekend. They scored what, like 5 runs in the last two games. They are not scoring a lot of runs. It is still mighty grim. In a lot of ways.
The thing is, like, it's encouraging, I think, because you were getting at this, that, like, at least the hits are coming. Like, because I think before they just weren't even hitting, Like, they weren't scoring and they weren't hitting. Like, Vlad was slumping and they were slumping really hard, all of them at the same time. And now that at least you see some guys making some solid contact, you see some guys getting on base. The one thing is, like, they're not getting opportune hits. Like, they're not getting hits when they have guys in scoring position, and they're not getting that like one big hit that gives them an insurance run. Or like even today, it was like that play, I guess in the ninth, where like Bo advanced and then he was thrown out on a Teoscar single, I think, or like fielder's choice, I guess. And then the next batter came up, was it Kirk? And like and he hit one to the outfield, which obviously would have scored Bichette from second, but Bichette wasn't on base anymore because he got caught up in that sort of like, hesitation between bases and then the rundown. And it was like, that just felt so, August 2021 Blue Jays, where they are late August 2021 Blue Jays, where like they finally sort of would have got a hit with a runner in scoring position, but that runner in scoring position was no longer in scoring position because he got thrown out. It was just, they won the game anyway, so it doesn't matter. And Tim, shout out Tim Meza, got his first major league save, 4-out save. So, no harm, no foul. But it just kind of was funny to me. It's like, if if the offense is sparked a little bit from these two close wins, and then they are facing the Orioles, and the Orioles can't figure if the Orioles can't solve this slump, this runners in scoring position slump, I don't know what will, because after that they face the A's and then the Yankees. So those are teams that you want to be out of your slump when you're facing them.
Yeah, I would say that is safe to say. The Blue Jays scored 6 runs in 3 games against the Detroit Tigers, and they won 2 of those games. If I told you that the team that has hit the most home runs in the American League would have 12 hits on Saturday, would you assume they would have scored more or fewer than 3 runs? One of them was as a result of the automatic runner being plunked out there on second base and then being able to score on a bloop that landed in front of the left fielder. It's really just put a magnifying glass, I think, that game, Saturday's game in particular, where just so many hits and so many opportunities, and they just – I think that's the thing, that the home runs have dried up, right? There's no more better shortcut to scoring runs than hitting it over the fence. And the Blue Jays, in addition, by not hitting the ball over the fence, they then put all that extra pressure on their offense to string hits together, which they're not really capable of doing right now. When they're not hitting home runs in August, they are in the middle of the pack. They've hit 33 home runs in August, which I think, I don't know if that includes today. That might have been coming into today, but that's outside of who they have been this season. So if you don't hit the ball over the fence, you got to string hits together. The Blue Jays are just doing half of that, or not able to string hits, having some weird odd base running things. Then they've got all the fucking bunts, and then even today they had the bases loaded with nobody out and didn't score, mm-hmm. which is suboptimal in terms of outcomes. But this is when it needs to kind of get right. As you said, they've got to face the Orioles. It would be great from Blue Jays' perspective to get right, to get healthy, and to kind of get back on track against the Orioles back at home. Coming back to the Rogers Center. One thing we haven't talked a little bit about, and maybe it's in bad taste, but to talk about the way that Saturday's game or Friday night's game ended, with Josh Palacios in center field diving for that ball, costing the Blue Jays a run on the inside the park home run. And then even I saw a bunch of people talking about this. To me in particular, it was Corey Dickerson suddenly can't throw the baseball at all. He has just really struggled to throw the ball. So that play, that Josh Palacios play. So a couple of different times, Corey Dickerson has definitely tried to like throw the ball off balance, like trying to be like an infielder, and just made some really bad throws. And again, that you have to believe that the Jerod Dyson thing was in the works before that one play on Friday night. But at the same time,
it happened before.
Sorry?
It did.
Did they sign him Friday and they called him up Saturday?
Well, it wasn't like even calling him up. It was just he had to arrive. Like he had to get to Detroit.
Yeah,
They picked him up on waivers on Friday early in the day. Like
good.
Before the game. Yes, for sure.
That's good. Okay. Because at the same time, I can imagine like Ross Atkins slamming his phone down and be like, get me Jerod Dyson's fucking agent on the phone. I've had enough. I need an outfielder. Because it's not been a strength this season, the outfield defense. And again, I'm someone who is very apologetic. I'm happy to make excuses for Randall Grichuk. I think he's a fine outfielder. I don't think he's been the problem, but they're definitely not like saving themselves any outs out there in the outfield.
No.
Which we talked about, but that's not about the offense. Caitlin, what do you got coming up this week?
Oh, I wanted to ask you at the beginning of this podcast, you said you had reason for optimism about the Blue Jays. Is there a specific reason you're optimistic, or is it just were you just talking about like the fact that they hit a little bit today and got two wins out of 3? And
I think the starting pitching is a reason for optimism. I don't think that there's any of all the performers, of all the guys in the rotation, maybe like Steven Matz is kind of the one that you're waiting for the other shoe to drop because he has been so good. The guy that you and I were kind of penciling on as the guy on the outs, maybe. with Matz or Stripling, with Simon Stripling before he went down. Obviously getting a great performance like that out of Jose Barrios is so huge, but I think that that's a reason for optimism. I think that that the Blue Jays are like absolutely playing with the regression gods this year. So for the first however long, it was, oh, look at the run differential. Look at the run differential. It's gonna catch up. They're gonna go on a run. And now it's like they've taken that the run differential thing to its like to its logical conclusion in terms of just being like, oh yeah, well watch us. We can't even hit at all with runners in scoring position. We will defy the law of averages by just refusing to do anything that that resembles competency in those important situations. The run differential conversation has definitely quieted down, as they're not quite in the same league as some of the, as where they were. You know, losing a ton of games, losing every series for a month will do that for you. But I just, the offense is going to score, George Springer or otherwise. This team is going to score. They're going to hit home runs in bunches again. If it's because Dante Bichette is around to give them a new voice instead of them having the Charlie Brown like wah 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 when Guillermo Martinez or whoever else is talking to them, or just when they're talking to each other when they're burned out, I think they'll hit home runs, and as soon as they start hitting home runs again, they're going to start winning some more games, especially against bad teams. It's just a matter of can they score, right? Like, can they do that against the Yankees? Obviously, the Yankees have had some great pitching, and the Yankees bullpen is, again, the Yankees bullpen. And Oakland is struggling a little bit, so maybe it's a good time for the Blue Jays to catch them. But I think there's reason for optimism, mostly because it can't get worse than it was for the last, like, 4 weeks. It's like rock bottom for the season. It's like how bad can a good team play? Like, what is the difference between a good team and a bad team? It's like, look, you watch the Blue Jays, you see a good team playing badly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know that they, like, played that badly, like, as a whole. Like, it feels like they weren't hitting. They were pitching really well. Bullpen was pitching well. Starting pitching was pitching well. Defensively, it's more been, like, one really costly mistake that's lost them games. Like, if you think, obviously, the Palacios game that we talked about. But the week before, this last Sunday, where I'm sure everyone today was holding their breath as the final ball, ground ball bounced over to Marcus Semien and he had to make a short throw to first base. And, but you know, a week ago when that happened, it was, that whole game was a kind of a tight affair as well. And the Blue Jays played really well. And then they just made a mistake at the wrong time. And obviously they couldn't score in extra innings. And so to me, like, there's been some bad games. There's been some questionable, like, managerial decisions about the bunts and all that kind of stuff. But, like, I watched the Red Sox a couple days ago when they played that mistake-ridden game against the Rangers, and they made, like, 5 errors in a game. It was just, like, a totally mess. Like, the Blue Jays have not played a game where they have had, like, 5 errors and they've just been booting the ball around. Like, it's just been, like, costly mistakes, really untimely mistakes. All their sort of factors of the team not like clicking at once. And that's been their undoing. Let me add my optimism and then we can end this. So I'm like, my new favorite thing to do is just to, like, see who all the other teams are playing to, like, figure out if, like, the Blue Jays can, you know, like, if this could be a good opportunity for them. And this, I think, is one of the better opportunities. And I've said this before, obviously, when they were, like, playing the Detroit Tigers or whatever. But so the Red Sox are playing the Rays, I believe, this next series. And the Seattle Mariners, who just lost 3 of 4 to the Royals, are playing the Astros, who also just got killed by the Rangers, but whatever. The Astros should be good. And the A's are facing the tough Tigers. So if the Tigers play as tightly as they play the Blue Jays against the A's, then the A's will be in tough as well. But anyway, the Blue Jays are playing the Orioles. So, like, if you looked at the schedule and thought, well, this is an opportunity where, like, the Blue Jays could win a series or sweep a series and gain 3 games. And some of the teams they're chasing down, like the Mariners and the A's and the Red Sox, could falter a little bit. Like, they're playing better teams. And the Tigers, like, are not bad. I think we all kind of like their record is probably, like, well, the Blue Jays have had a pretty good record in the second half, but, like, if you look at all the months, like, the Tigers have been a better than 500 team since May. They just had a really, really awful April where they won like 9 games. But they're actually not a bad team. So I guess the Blue Jays would have tied the season series with Tigers. So maybe that kind of tells you where they're at. But yeah, I think that's my reason for optimism for Blue Jays fans, is that you can kind of scoreboard watch this coming week for the first 3 games. And there's a chance that you could be happy with that, because the Blue Jays should be winning against the Orioles. And there's a chance the other teams might be losing against the teams they're playing.
I like that. I like that breakdown. I don't like the Rays. For the longest time, for this year, I've been like, the Rays are a good team with no good players. Well, now they've got a good player. Wander Franco forgot how to get out. Wander Franco has accelerated the learning curve and has sort of like just figured it out at the big league level, and it's bad. But yeah, the you got to hope, if you're the Blue Jays fan, that they have enough time left to take advantage of some of the things that, because by all rights, they should be done. Their season should have been over. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different opportunities where, if you were super cynical, you could have, or just exist online, you could have been like, this is it, the season's over. That's it, the season's over. But you can't. I don't think you can say that yet. I don't think you can say the season's over, because the door has been left open with a dead body keeled over, lying the Red Sox carcass. The door is getting jammed on their jugular, right against their Adam's apple, but the door is not closed, and the Blue Jays may step over that carcass and may do something really exciting, I think.
Yeah, the thing with the Blue Jays and all the teams that the Blue Jays are chasing, including the Blue Jays themselves, are like struggling in like somewhat similar ways, or just they're not able to like close out games. Like the A's has had issues with the bullpen, and they've had issues, I think, scoring a little bit as well, or taking advantage of scoring opportunities. The Red Sox bullpen is a mess right now, even though that was kind of a strength for them. At least the back end of their bullpen was a strength for them for the first half. And the Mariners have just been the Mariners all year, and they've just been winning all these one-run games. But they like have kind of relied on these like late game heroics, and you know, they played kind of three games against the Royals, and they lost because they didn't have those like late game heroics. So that is why you feel optimistic about the Blue Jays, is that, you know, it seems like the AL playoff picture is going to come down to which team starts to win at the right time. And the Yankees are proving that they're doing that right now. And I think no one's catching the Yankees for at least that first wild card spot. I don't know if the Yankees will be able to catch the Rays for first in the East, but like, they're going to make a race out of it, I think, till the very end. But the rest of the teams, like, it's just going to come down to like, who's going to go on the run at the exact right time as the other teams struggle. And that's like honestly what it's going to come down to. And it could come down to the final week, because I think all these teams have flaws, and those flaws are being exposed down the stretch. And it's just what team like can kind of overcome those flaws and figure it out when it really matters.
I would say, and you made this point really well just a few minutes ago, that even the Blue Jays, while their offense is obviously like really not firing on all cylinders, and while I said that they're a good team playing badly, the Blue Jays just need a little bit of luck. They need to get a few bounces, and I think that they'll be fine. And there's enough time that they could get a few bounces and be right there in the middle of it. Caitlin, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me, as we do every Sunday on Spin Right, about the Toronto Blue Jays. You got anything else to say? Any fond farewells for this fine week?
I do not. I've said you it all. Not.
You said that stay off anything east of the Don Valley Parkway might as well explode, is what I think I heard you say earlier. Anything west of Bathurst might as well just slide off into the ocean.
No.
Yeah, I think I heard you say that.
Everyone at me if you want some East End recommendations. I'm happy to be the East End ambassador.
The only good thing on the East End is Jerk King.
I don't live too far from there.
Bless. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. My name is Drew Fairservice. This is Spin Rate. We talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will come back to you with another one in just a few days. So thanks, and we'll talk to you on the next episode of Spin Rack.